Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm chatting with Mark Chandler. He is a managing partner over at Bannockburn Global Forex. Also writes the Mark to Market blog that I will post a link to. That's where you can, for the most part, stay up to date day to day on the data that Mark is watching and some of the corresponding market and sector moves. And Mark, I want to recap some of the data that we got this week out of the US, but then also compare it to what we're seeing out of Europe and also out of Canada, all with the big picture of looking at the US dollar. Start us off, Mark, with what you think was some of the key data out of the US this week that you noted, and also how it compared to some of the other countries that we need to compare it to when it comes to currency moves.
Sure. I'd say that a lot of the focus in this past week has been on the central bank meetings, but of course they didn't do anything. And so the markets, as investors, what we're most interested in is how the economy is doing now. What's the real time? And we get the close approximation of it in the form of the Purchasing Managers Index. We get a flash reading of it around the third week of the month, and we got it this week. And I think that the divergence between the U.S. and Europe will also be a feature in the coming days. Here's what it looks like. So the purchasing managers give us a manufacturing reading and a service sector reading. And above 50 is like sort of the boom bust on these diffusion indexes. More than 50 means that more people are seeing growing businesses, growing activity, and below 50 shrinking. And so in Europe, which had, of course, like the U.S., been hit hard by this virus, social restrictions, lockdowns, their composite fell. It was already below 50 in December. It was at 49.1, and it fell further in a negative territory or contracting territory, 47.5. And at the ECB meeting, Lagarde warned that not only will Q4 be weak, but it was going to carry over into Q1, and that's what we're seeing. On the other hand, the U.S., incredible data, PMI, again, same thing. We got the manufacturing, services, and a composite. And in the U.S., the manufacturing and service PMIs rose. And the market was looking for some weakness. After all, we too have been hit hard by the virus. The composite PMI went from 55.3 to 58. This is a big divergence between the U.S., which seems to be much more resilient than Europe. And that's why I say we're going to see this next week, too. We're going to get the GDP, fourth quarter GDP estimates from the U.S., Germany, and France. The U.S. is looking somewhere around 4%. That's where it seems like a lot of the models and a lot of the economists have sort of converged. Germany, at best, looks flat, stagnant. And the French economy looks like it could contract by about 4% just quarter over quarter. And so where does this leave us? I think back to the dollar. My sense is that we've got this growing this divergence that could last a couple more months at least. And the dollar, I thought, had been correcting higher after selling off since the election. But this past few days, the dollar's been trading relatively heavily. Like the euro fell the euro rose the first 4 days of the week. The Canadian dollar and sterling made the highest levels since the spring of 2018. But we're finishing the week on a firm note for the U.S. dollar. And I think that firmness is really illustrated by another divergence between the U.S. and Canada. So the U.S. had a horrible retail sales. I say some of the other data the U.S. has reported has been good, like these PMIs. But the U.S. had reported its third consecutive decline in retail sales. That was a December reading. But Canada, ahead of the weekend, recorded an incredibly strong November retail sales, up 1.3%. The market was looking for a flat number. You would think that the Canadian dollar would strengthen on that, but instead, it weakened. The U.S. dollar made new two-day highs against the Canadian dollar, moving above 127. And I think that just illustrates for me just that the corrective forces, the upside corrective forces for the U.S. dollar, it might be messy, but they look still intact.
Okay. So overall, too, can we say that the dollar maybe did just get so sold off that it is due for a bounce, and some of this data, again, might not be lining up with some of the shorter-term moves, but then also carrying that over to central banks. We have a Fed meeting coming up next week, and we also just had, let's say, well, the Bank of Canada meeting this past week. The Bank of Canada did nothing, really, in terms of all the central bank meetings we saw this last week. There was no movement by any of the central banks, even though some people thought that there could be a micro cut for the Central Bank of Canada. Now, when it comes to the Fed meeting, what's going to be important to watch here for currency moves and any other sectors?
Yeah, I hate to rain on the parade, but I think that this FOMC meeting is going to be a big non-event. And here's why. There's nothing for them to do. And, you know, as far as like policy goes, they've already told us they're going to continue to buy $80 billion of treasuries a month, $40 billion of agency mortgage-backed securities from the agencies for until there's substantial improvement in the economy. That threshold hasn't been met. And I think that, you know, it's funny, you know, these the statement from the FOMC is pretty formulaic, about five paragraphs. The December statement, three of the paragraphs were identical. And the paragraphs that were changed were just minor adjustments, really. And so I think that we shouldn't expect really much to happen or even be said. And I think that at best, the Federal Reserve Chairman Powell will likely say what ECB President Lagarde says, and that is that so far the economies are evolving as officials more or less thought they would be.
So what does that mean then for future markets and even for future monetary policy? If these markets are evolving, that to me almost comes off as a more positive comment. So does that mean that we should be expecting some better economic data then coming globally?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that that's really the sort of the message that I would take away from the central bank meetings and other officials that spoke, that somehow you've got this combination of a vaccine and monetary and fiscal stimulus in the pipeline and more to come possibly. And that the combination of the stimulus plus the vaccine is going to like sort of give us a mini boom. When? Not exactly sure when. It's partly the evolution of the virus and the rollout with the vaccine. But somewhere, Q2, late Q2, early Q3, around the middle of the year, we expect stronger economic. It's not a question of just expecting it, but I think that the confidence of it. That's what I note. And one of the little like tells, is that Japan, when the BOJ met, as you said, they didn't do anything, but they did change their forecasts, and they revised up their forecast slightly for the fiscal year that begins 1st of April. So fiscal 2021, they revised up the forecast. And so my general sense is we're probably at the monetary policy peak. That is to say, you know, I was one of those guys who were looking for that mini cut from the Bank of Canada, only because the Bank of Canada governor seemed to suggest that it was possible. And you look at some of the data, like the weakness in the employment data, you think maybe that softness of the CPI. You think, well, if they're going to do it, this seems to be as good of a time as any. But I think that they did not go, of course. And I think that we're probably at the end of the interest rate cuts and the end of expanding monetary stimulus. Maintaining it is one thing, but I think the next big move will be tapering the quantitative easing or the bond buying. I think the next move will taper those bond buying.
Do you think that could happen this year, that we could see a little bit more of a hawkish tone? I know this seems very out of the ordinary for central banks, especially how dovish they're speaking now, but what do you think, Mark, that we will get some sort of hawkish tone from central banks this year?
Oh, I think so. I think that, I mean, if we're right about what's going to happen, say Q3 or early Q4, I can see, for example, the Bank of Canada, which is buying $4 billion Canadian dollars of government bonds, I could see them tapering. And right now, I'd say the debate in the U.S. seems to be between some of the regional Federal Reserve presidents who say they could contemplate tapering before the end of the year, and the governors, which say that seems still too early.
That's fair. Okay, so then there is this battle ongoing. What does it mean for markets, though? Markets and even commodities, everything's been supported by the whole concept of easy money and easy money continuing, maybe even ramping up, especially in the U.S. with the new president. That, or what you're saying, kind of throws that whole narrative on its head.
Well, I'd say that, you know, we're seeing very good demand at the U.S. Auctions of the long-end securities. And so the bonds made this adjustment, but it's not like bond yields are soaring. They sort of seem to be finding a trading range, and maybe we'll get have to get further into Q1 before we get the next leg up in yields. But even there, what are we really talking about, 120? So we're still talking about negative real interest rates, and that's really an important point. And why I think that I was wrong about another thing besides about the Bank of Canada. I was also wrong. I had thought that the Federal Reserve would be doing some kind of yield curve control, or at least shifting its buying toward the long end of the curve. But so far, say in the last few months, the rise in long-term U.S. yields is accounted for strictly by the increase in inflation expectations. What that means is that real interest rates in the U.S. are still very low, negative. And because they're negative, I think the Federal Reserve doesn't mind. I mean, they want to foster some inflation. I think that because it's happening to the to nominal rates and not real rates, I think the Fed is being more tolerant.
Now, when it comes to inflation, that to me seems like what really matters here. All this economic data, even some of the jobs data, really hasn't had a lasting impact on these markets. But it is these inflation expectations that does tie into real yields. This seems to be the most important data and aspect of the economy to watch. Is that fair to say, Mark?
I think so. But I think it's also very, like, you got to be careful. We don't want to be like the dog that chases a car, and when it catches it, it doesn't know what to do with it. You know, in the sense that, what are we really measuring when we measure inflation? Is it, so for example, in March and April of 2020, the U.S., like many other countries, had a big drop in measured inflation. Headline CPI, core CPI, headline PCE deflator, they all were very weak, negative, in March and April. So what's going to happen this year, those numbers will drop out of the year-over-year comparison. Those negative numbers will be replaced by positive numbers. Even if it's a zero or a plus one, you're replacing a negative number with a considerably higher number. Measured inflation, then, is going to look like it's risen sharply in the March and April period. And this is the inflation scare, where everybody can, you know, everybody was worried about inflation and say, we told you so. But then what's going to happen is in the summer, that inflation pressure is going to ease for the same reason. In the June to August period in 2020, we saw higher price pressures, unusually high, as they were sort of playing catch up from the spring. So bottom line here is, I think that we're going to see some volatility in the measure of inflation. And so we want to just be clear on what we're really looking at. And I think that higher asset prices are not really what's meant by inflation. And even when we look at the CRB index, or a basket of commodities, I think you might find two distinct groups. One group are the industrial, say the metals, copper, aluminum. These are iron ore. These are the demand for these is coming from where they're used for production. And that's Asia. So Asia economic recovery seems to be gaining some momentum. That's reflected in stronger demand for commodities, raw materials. On the other hand, we've also seen a rise in some agricultural commodities. That seems to me to much be more on the supply side than the demand side. Smaller harvests, bad weather kind of stories. And so when we think about inflation, we want to just be clear what we're measuring and be aware of the differences between what we're really measuring. So in the U.S., for example, the CPI is, half of it is shelter and medical. So, and I also want to make a distinction between the price of goods, which could be seeing deflationary pressure still, and services, which might not. And you also want to just be thinking about, like, what this means, like, just how it plays out globally between the demand from Asia and the reduced supply of some agricultural goods.
So, Mark, can you simplify this for everybody in terms of market impacts, whether it comes to broad averages or even down to the commodities? It sounds like you think that some commodities will do well, but it won't necessarily just be a rush into any certain commodity sector.
Yeah, so I would just think about like what's the play really? Is the play on the reflation? And that means stronger Asia, which means stronger industrial commodities? Or is it a play on the weather volatility? And is that for about, say, the soy and cotton and corn? So one is just to like fine-tune. I find as a strategist, if I could get as close to my real bet, my real view as possible to be able to implement it, I feel better about it. So it's less noisy. So I'm right or I'm wrong as opposed to being hit by other things. So I think that I would just be watching these things, but just to be also aware of this pressure that's just in the math itself on the inflation.
All right, Mark, we'll wrap it up there. I will post a link to your blog, Mark to Market. It's well worth your time. And hey, Mark, it's an interesting year, and it will continue to be an interesting year. Still, so much that we don't know about how these economies are going to recover, but it does seem like expectations are getting more optimistic. We'll see if it actually works out that way. Mark, thanks for your time. Have a great weekend.
Good luck to everybody. Thank you.